You're listening to the Master Passive Income Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Breakthrough Investor Show. My name is Charles Rose Jr. With me is William Palmer, my amazing co-host. And in today's episode, our guest will be talking about how he manages over $300 million in commercial real estate and acquired over 3,000 commercial real estate and apartment units.
That's right, Charles. And he's also hosts a mastermind as well as a podcast and runs a multifamily coaching program. Let's get started.
Welcome to the Breakthrough Investor Show, where we guide you to financial freedom and break barriers in your investing to give you the secrets to success. And now, here are your hosts, Charles Rose Jr. and William Palmer.
What's up, William?
Not much, Charles. Just happy to be here. How about you, man?
Man, I'm super happy to be here, and I'm just like super excited about today's guest. Man, I mean, he is a very, very awesome guy, humble guy. Met him through Dustin Heiner at RubeCon, Real Estate Wealth Builders Conference. And he and his wife were just, you know, just so down to earth, you know? It's like when you see like these big like celebrities and, you know, sometimes you're afraid to walk up to them, but they were not like that at all. Like they were so friendly and so helpful, man.
Absolutely.
And you got to meet them too, right?
I did very briefly. And we'll have to blame Dustin for introducing us to all these fantastic people. And I'm sure he'll take the blame very willingly. But
he will.
Yeah.
He will.
He will. Yeah. Super excited about today's interview, especially looking into like multifamily deals, syndication, and the fact that in 6 short years, they have 2,300 apartments in their business. It's pretty phenomenal stuff. Like that amount of growth. You're doing something right. So I'm really, mm-hmm. really, really interested in hearing how they kind of got where they're at and maybe some of those pivotal moments that made them a breakthrough investor.
Yeah, man. I'm super excited too, because, you know, and the cool thing about our guest today and his wife and their team, you know, they are just so giving, you know, they give through so many different things that they do. I mean, he's the host of 2 different podcasts, right? Where they help people to become their best selves and to invest in multifamily. And I even had the honor and the blessing, William, to attend one of their conferences, man. It was so awesome. Cool. It was so awesome. Like, William, the way that they gave is like literally like I felt like, you know, I should be sent writing them a check. You know what I mean? After that, because it's like, you know, literally like, you know, sometimes, our guests today, you have people coming up on stage. He literally coached them at the conference for like the fraction of, you know, what they're really worth. So they're just so given. That's the kind of people they are. And they have like tons of ways that you can connect them. He'll share some more of that. But our guest today is just so many different things, man. Like our intro would probably be an hour long if we were to say everything. but, you know, he's an entrepreneur. He's a coach. And, you know, above all, he's a husband and a father. And he takes, you know, real pride in that. And they are awesome family people. And I love that about them. My wife and I, you know, they give us like goals. Like, oh, we need to be couples like them. It's so awesome. But without further ado, man, I'm just so excited to bring on today's guest, who is none other than Jason Yerusi. Jason, what's up, man? How fantastic are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm really excited to be here. I'm really excited to dive in with each of you and just talk to your audience about all the things happening in today's environment.
Man, this is awesome. Yes, Jason, man. Jason, so, you know, I got to hear your story a number of times, you know, at RubeCon, on different podcasts, and at your conference. Man, I'm just, and every time I hear it, I feel like I pick up something like different and, sure. and, you know, something that could, you know, help me, inspire me, encourage me and get to that next level. And our listeners, they want to know your story and I want to hear it again. I won't get tired of hearing your story. So, you know, first, you know, tell us about your investing journey. What sure. initially made you want to do it as well?
you know, it's been a road of just not being satisfied and then not being complacent and say, okay, I'm not happy where I am, but I'm going to stay where I am. Right. And so that's been the trajectory ever since, you know, I was in New York City, right. I met Peely in 2003. It took her about, you know, probably a decade to look at me and want to be my girlfriend. But in the meantime, we were working actively in a very busy bar. And then I went and opened up another bar restaurant, opened up and sold a brewery, started doing a lot of things in a restaurant and bar world. And then early 2010-11, Hurricane Sandy happened and that storm decimated the East Coast. I was living in New York City at the time and my dad was in New Jersey. He just happened to retire recently, but he was running a very unique construction business that lifts houses. And he would lift houses for a lot of reasons. One of them being when houses get flooded, he would actually raise the framed house off the foundation, put it up in the air and build it higher. So hopefully it wouldn't flood in the future, right? So his business, just on a unique character, would do like 10 or 12 projects a year. And then that storm happens, just crushes the East Coast. And overnight his business starts doing, having thousands of calls a day. It was just insanity how many calls were happening because of all the need of hundreds and thousands of people affected. My brother was working for me at the time, a little brother, Peely, now still my girlfriend at the time, now my wife. We moved up out of New York City and went up and to help dad start and really just propel forward the family business. The thing that was really the through line is I was constantly doing transactional jobs, right? So the bar world, you know, you serve a drink, you get a tip. Here in construction, it was such a unique specialized business. We couldn't step out of the business, right? Because you had to be highly trained to do this. There was so much risk involved that we had to be very active, right? And it was constantly transactional that if we didn't work a day, there would be no revenue, right? And so I was constantly tied to that narrative here. And as Peely became pregnant with our first kiddo, you know, we said, hey, if we are going to be able to control our day and just get back some more time, because again, we're so busy that we have to find another way. And what came up was the word real estate. But as we know, real estate can mean 5,000 different things. It could be wholetailing, flipping, Airbnbs, you know, tax liens, like you name it, right? So we started with the first thing that came upon us. Peely went out and got a real estate license. She was doing this while she was pregnant, got her license. And we started doing these very intrinsic flips. So here we are. We're still not out of the construction business now. We're still doing all these jobs, very competitive. And now we're doing all these flips. And what we found is why that was going good. We were just adding on transactions on top of transactions and just creating more business in our life. And so although we were doing something different, it was getting us the same result. So we just kept asking that question, like, what else can we do? And we started wholesale, we started doing an Airbnb, and we met someone at a real estate meeting, Peely did, where he was buying rentals out of state. He was buying rentals and basically getting teams in place, getting rented out and having a property manager. And he was doing that, you know, 1,000 miles away. That was that light bulb. And we started to follow that method. However, he was doing basically single families. We just, by happenstance, started doing two families, three families. You know, we started buying those there. And it started to work, right? Lo and behold, we're pulling ourselves out of the work because I'm not driving 1,000 miles to go, we'll say any of the little tasks of the job here. So we were forced to empower forth to put forward teams to do the project, take care of the project and run the project while we were still active in New Jersey. And that started going very well. We started to see, you know, mail have money in it, right? All these different things that start to add up. And it was great. However, again, we were capped by the economies of scale. I had had small restaurants and large restaurants, and I realized very quickly that I wasn't going to be able to scale having a bunch of duplexes, 50 duplexes all around town. So we just kept asking that question, like, okay, what else is there? And came upon a podcast just like this where someone was talking about buying apartment buildings. And they were doing that through something called syndication. And that was that light bulb moment where I understood the math that if we could buy this 2-unit, well, doing the 100-unit, right? Because I'd seen small and large restaurants, small and large construction projects, right? They all have the same steps in place. But if you can mentally be prepared to take on the larger project, there's so many more benefits that can be added on by doing so. So we sold off those smaller properties, went all in about 2016 on large apartment investing, learning everything we can. And that was when we got to 2017, started making offers. We purchased our first multifamily property. It was a 94 unit in Louisville, Kentucky. And that was in May of 2017. And that was a trajectory, this we'll say that the launch point for us to get on the path to where we are today.
Man, wow. That's amazing. Wow. So you went from like all the buying all these duplexes and triplexes to like a 94 unit apartment complex. Yeah. So talk about that some more. When you bought that, was it a syndication or did you have enough money for the down payment yourself after selling off your portfolio of your existing properties? How did you purchase this 94 unit? I'm sure a lot of listeners will be wanting to know.
Yeah, it was only, we just brought like five of the smaller properties. So we just realized very quickly it wasn't going to get there. So we sold that off, but we went out and syndicated the apartment building. That was really the route that we learned. That was the first word we heard was syndication, right? So we just followed that method, right? Someone was doing that method, so we followed that method. Now to date, we still do syndication. At times we do partnerships, at times we buy them ourselves, but that was just the method that came in front of us. We said, that makes sense, so we would do it. So before finding the building, we started to go out to our network, our friends and family, let them know what we were doing, let them know why we wanted to do it, let them know all the benefits for why it would make sense for us to do this and how it could potentially benefit them. And we got a stable of investors through our friends and family that would be ready when we found that like kind of opportunity, right? So we presented this before finding it. So we were confident that we, at the time we had to raise about $750,000. We were confident that we could raise, you know, at least $1 million when we needed it, because we had already done a bunch of the groundwork telling people about the potential of these opportunities. So when we did find this opportunity, we basically raised the money in the day because we had already done the legwork. So we did, we got all that ready. Of course, we did the work to really identify why we wanted to be in the market. What was the team we wanted to have in place, right? There's everything from ourselves, right? Like we were basically wearing all the hats from the GP, general partnership operation side, but then we had on-site, right? So we had our property managers, we had our legal, we had our insurance carriers, we had all the different pieces of the puzzle that came together to make this project a success.
Wow. I think about all of that. And the one thing that blows my mind is the amount of numbers that are involved in a syndication, which, I mean, I don't know about you, Charles, you're probably a little more familiar with syndications than myself, but how did you manage all of that stuff? Like you think about somebody puts in $50,000, what's their return as opposed to 7,500? It sounds like a whole lot of math with a really, really good Excel spreadsheet. So how'd you start doing that?
So today we have proprietary software. We have, you know, an investor portal. We can go in there and we run everything through the portal. However, in the beginning, we had an Excel spreadsheet and we were running it through there, right? And I'm competent in Excel, right? And done financial modeling in the past, right? And so I just did that, right? As we scaled up, that wasn't going to be replicable, but it sure did us for our first 3-4 deals. We were able to stay with that system because it was just the system that we needed at the time. And so again, like with that, from an underwriting point, like I could understand that world and I was able to learn and adapt to that. So that's a world I was good with. However, you know, if you are doing this and want to do this proactively and that's not your strong point, then find someone who can be part of your partnership that can be really strong in the back and really strong with the numbers, really strong with financial modeling, right? Mm-hmm. So this step for us was that we wore all the hats because, you know, we, at the time, that's just all we knew. But as we've grown now, we've done it in a few ways where sometimes we'll bring on different partners, right? That will help us make the success. And we've also hired a team here at Uruzi Holdings that helps us with a bunch of the back end day-to-day work to make these projects a success.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. That's pretty cool, man. And what I love about what you said is, you know, if that's not your strong suit, you find someone who can, you know, who's strong at that, right? Or join programs, right? You know, I got to see, you know, some of the types of programs that you all use, and you know, it's awesome. Like you all make it so much easier. Like if someone don't know how to do it, like you know, you all have some cool systems in place, and so I love how you all do that to help so many people achieve their goals, man. So with that being said, like, you know, so at what point did you and Peely decide like, okay, you know, I'm going to take this program and help as many people as possible, like teach them what I learned. So, you know, talk more about how your mastermind and some of the things you're doing, like podcasts, how was all that birthed during this process?
So when we were in New Jersey, I just had the idea to start a meetup, and that was fantastic. We just started a meetup, and then once a month we do a meetup, and by the end we had like 3,000 members. So it just truly grew because I was only just doing multifamily, right? Everybody else was doing all kinds of real estate. It would always change, and I said, I'll just do multifamily. So when we moved to down to Tennessee almost just about 3 years ago, you know, we didn't have that expiration to do the meetup anymore. So I started to empower other people within our network to run the meetup. However, I really did enjoy giving back, and to do it on a bigger scale, we said, you know what, let's see how we can do this this systematically to be able to offer this to many other people, right? Because it does seem scary in the onset, but if you just break it down here, is that we're looking for a building that's not being run right, whether it's both from the just the operation side or the building's defunct, where we can make it a better place to live, right? Let's just keep it that simple. And so for one part, if that's our starting base, right? If that's where we're starting here, okay, what do we need to do that? Well, we need to know, okay, where are we going to invest, right? What type of buildings do we want? Who are going to be the people that are going to live there, right? Who are going to be the people that run the deal, right? Run the project, right? Who are going to be some of our partners, right? We have our lending partners, right? We have our brokers, right? Some of the partners that will make this a success, right? And then what's the goal, right? What's the goal here? Is this to buy this forever? Is this to buy this and, you know, with a couple of people and do a quick flip, even though it's an apartment building, right? Or is this to have some kind of metrics of return over a window, right? And if you break it down like that, you say, okay, you know, that's approachable. But most of the time you say, oh, there's a 100-unit apartment building. I don't know how I'm going to start to do that. But when we just notch it down to break in the steps, it all becomes something that can be accomplished. And then the goal gets a lot closer.
So speaking of goals, Jason, like what were some of those things, those goals you might have had to set for yourself to succeed, to like become that breakthrough investor, to kind of get to the next level?
We kept it simple, is that we focus on getting one deal a quarter. Now, that doesn't mean we do a deal a quarter, but we focus on doing, because like you can't control the goal, but you can control the actions, right? So I can be accountable to the action, but it can't be controllable to the results, right? So if I wanted to get to the point here where I say, hey, I want to buy a deal a quarter, well, if there's no good deals or there's just not a lot of opportunity, right, there's either two parts. One, my actions need to ramp up, or I need to do my action differently, or two, I just need to be patient, right? So we're constantly patiently aggressive, right, to get to the right opportunity. So we might do one deal in the first quarter, then maybe we don't do anything in the second and third quarter, and then maybe the third quarter we do three, right? But if I continue to put that energy in and put that energy in each and every quarter to do the work to get a deal, I find things work out for us.
Man. But that's awesome how you mentioned that too, Jason, because a lot of people that they get discouraged, they give up after like not hitting that goal versus like assessing, like you said, you know, am I putting enough action? Do I need to, you know, step it up in this area, or do I just need to be patient? And so I think that's some really good advice when people are listening, because sometimes right before that breakthrough to the next level, sometimes, you know, you just may need to be patient. Or like you said, you may need to take more action. So that's awesome. And that kind of leads me to kind of think of like, as you were going through your whole journey, I'm sure that they, you know, that there may have been challenges. There may have been, you know, things, you know, some people call it setbacks or lessons learned. You know, can you share some of the biggest mind challenges that you had to go through to become a successful breakthrough investor?
You know, you have to, there's always that part, right, where you grow in your plateau, you grow in your plateau, and they're hard to ever go because there's a lot of learning lessons going, right, from going from like small to medium to large, right? Like right now, I'd say like we're medium, like there's a lot of larger companies out there. However, there's a time here where you are the bottleneck, right, where you're trying to do it all yourself, right? And Peely and I were doing that for a long time, and we probably did it for too long, right? We did it for too long. We were holding things back and not giving the best performance, because if there's 10 things to do and there's two of us, right, and there's only a certain time of window, something's not going to get done. Even though when we get it all done, it's going to be done at 100%, at a point you have to bring on team to be able to empower you forward so things can happen as needed to happen in a timely manner. And so building out a team, building other people onto the roster was really a game changer for us, because it allowed us to maximize impact and not limit our overall exposure to what could be completed in a day or a time frame.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. That's really good that you mentioned that too, because that could be a hard part of the process, is to like to release, you know, something that you're doing. And, you know, maybe, you know, sometimes people think, you know, I'm the best person to do it. And maybe you may be the best person to do it, but maybe your time may be better spent someplace else, right? Would you agree with that?
Yeah. I mean, you can give values to those things, right? Because there's things that you can break it down like, okay, if there's five things you're going to do them best, okay, what do you like to do? Because maybe you only like to do three of them. So the other two of them, you should get rid of them, right? But if you like do them all, right, well, you have to say, like, is this a $5,000 task? This is a, you know, a $200 task. This is a $20 task. This is a $15 task. And this is a $8 task, right? Well, you really shouldn't be doing the last three. And not to say that it's beneath or nothing else, but as you grow here, there's other people that's a perfect task for it. Now you're taking away that task from them, right? And so they would be perfect for that task. They like doing that task. They'd be fulfilled doing that task. It's right where they should be. But now because you're doing that, one, you're not getting everything done. And two, you're taking a job away from somebody else that could be really beneficial to be in that role.
It's like find your lane and stay in your lane, so to speak. Find what you're good at.
Highest and best use would be a good way, right? You can find like where you can have the most value, right? And the most opportunity to excel forward, right? So from our business, if you think about it, like, you know, I could do a lot of things, but if we don't have leads and we don't have money, right, then there's no meeting ground, right? And so in any business, you think of a real estate business, right? There has to be someone driving leads and someone to drive money, right? So if you have both of them, you're in a lot of control. But if you have one of them, you still need the other, but you have more control. But in the middle, right, there's the other pieces. So like if people say, hey, I'm really strong on the asset management of the project or like the construction work of the project, right? Cool. That's great. There is a use for that. However, for that person to have a role, someone else has to find the project. Someone else has to put it together. Someone else has to do the due diligence. Someone else has to do the underwriting. Someone else has to put all together for the loan. Someone else has to get it funded and get it closed for that person to have a job to do, right? So you have to look at like, where's your functionality in the job and how useful it is to the overall project.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Man, William, I really wish you got to attend their multifamily live conference. It just the way that the energy of the conference was so amazing and just the way they explained things, like it was so awesome. I remember, you know, when y'all explained different roles, you know, using different characters like Black Widow or Iron Man.
Fun. We did that. Yep.
That was so fun.
Yeah. And great. I'll have to get on one some point.
Yeah. You have to. And the cool thing about that too, William, is like, you know, like if you didn't know anything about multifamily, like that was at my, you know, the beginning of my multifamily journey. I'm definitely not an expert in multifamily, but I had a good foundation, you know, from going to that conference. Cause I'd reach out to Jason, let him know I was interested in multifamily. He's like, well, you should come to the conference.
Yeah.
And so just like learning that solid foundation was so helpful. And I know some people are going to, you know, be listening and wondering, you know, how can I become a multifamily investor? Like, what would you say are the steps to becoming a multifamily investor? And I know it's probably a lot of stuff, but how can someone start that journey and that process of becoming a multifamily investor and a successful one? Yeah, I mean,
there's a ton of free information out there to get you started, right? We have the Multifamily Live podcast. You can go and just dive into a ton of content there. You can go and explore and just look at some of the apartment buildings around. And from that point, go to any of the meetups, right? Listen to any other podcasts that are out there. We have the 7-figure Multifamily Mastermind, which is a higher ticket, higher price mastermind where people come to just have all the steps provided to walk them through it so they can take the action through the steps. But ideally, you have to say, why do you want to? Like, what are you looking to do with this? Like, what's the goal with what you want to do? And then where? Like, do you want to invest where you are? Do you want to invest somewhere different, right? So you have to choose where that's going to be that you're going to find these investments. What's that investment going to look like, right? What are the roles, right? Learn the processes. Like, do I know how to underwrite? Do I know how to go out there and speak to investors? Do I know what kind of banks I need to look for? Do I know how to speak to property managers, right? Do I know all of that information or do I need to learn it, right? To be able to empower to do these steps. And when a project comes together, right? How do I go and look at that project from a modeling perspective to underwrite it to see if it fits what we're looking for? And then now who is that team that's going to help us be successful, right? So those are some of the key pieces, right? We typically break it down to about 12 steps, right? All the way from the evolution of the why to closing of the deal in the mastermind, because that elaborates and gives people a runway to be able to notch off the steps as they go. And some are going to be stronger in some steps. Like some might be natural talkers, right? So they're great getting out there, you know, talking to their network, exploring their network, searching for deals. Others might be really, just minded where they're able to go in there and just really hammer in to understand underwriting very quickly, right? So some may tier, but then maybe that's the role that they'll start fulfilling as part of a team. Or then that part, maybe they're able to do all the roles depending on the type of projects they go after.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. And of those 12 steps, which one or which ones you would say is kind of like the most important to kind of get started on this whole journey? Would you say
it's like you can start with mindset, right? You have to make the choice of why you want to do it, but then you just have to make a choice. People get stuck on the outside of just saying, I want to buy an apartment building, and then they're not focused. And so lack of focus and lack of clarity keep them from where they want to go, right? So they'll be, maybe they're going to be in Baltimore, Maryland, and then someone will send them a deal, you know, in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. So like, that might be good, right? And then maybe they'll send them a deal in Miami, Florida. So they'll go look at that. And one will be a 10 unit, the other will be a 100 unit. The other one will be, you know, built in 1910. The next one will be, you know, 2020, right? So they don't have a frame in mind that they're looking for. It's like going to the car lot, say, I want to buy a car, but you don't even know what you're looking for, right? Everything's going to look good. But when you fully dive into the deals, by the time you get there, if it's a good opportunity, someone else has already beat you to it that's focused on it. But you have to learn so much. You have to learn all these different markets, all these different building types, all these different teams, right? It's so widespread that you can never get to a full, true understanding of what you're looking for.
So out of all the I guess, age and size and things like that, what have you guys found is like your kind of bread and butter? I know you probably started out with, what was it, like 90, 92 units, something like that for your first one.
Yeah, that was 1970 to 94 units. We've done a lot between like 1970 and 2005. And that's been a good part because it fits and meets the workforce housing nature, right? You don't have the opportunity to replicate that style. And it's the one that's constantly in need, right? So if you look at it, we need like 16 million homes built in this decade. We're going to get to about 11 and a half. We're constantly at a shortage, but it's not the highest tier that we're always at a shortage of. It's the ones that are the working class family homes that we constantly need that we don't replicate at a price point that they can get into.
Gotcha. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So, and that kind of made me think of, sometimes I think like right now we see different stories with where we are in the market cycle and which can be different in each city, but, where do you see the future of syndication and how can someone, if they want to get into syndication, how can they stay in? I heard somebody say something like, you know, you want to figure out how to buy real estate and you want to figure out how to never lose it. And so where are the opportunities and what do you think is the best way to stay in syndication long term?
You know your lane. Like, again, it's going to get down to it is that like everything can look good, right? But you really have to know your lane because it helps you too on just what your buy box is, like what you buy going forward. But it honestly helps you too with your investors, right? If you're looking at all these different opportunities, your investors get confused. You're like, well, you know, you're just looking at this thing and now you're looking at this thing. And like, there, it's like a confused mind says no, right? So if you want to have success going forward, you want to have predictability. It's okay to be boring. It's okay for things not to have this excitement factor out there. It's okay for them to be predictable, right? Because people like predictability in their life, especially when it's coming to their money and their returns.
Yeah, it makes you more of a stable bet.
Correct. And it also makes it easier for your team to understand the processes, your team to understand how to work. Because if not, it's like we're constantly, you know, that's why you see like, we'll go back to cars again, right? Like people will specialize in like European cars or like specialize in like, you know, like trucks, right? It's because like that needs a specialty where every time it was just a new different type of vehicle, you'd have to learn like, how do we do that, right? How do I go in there and assess this, right? And it's the same thing in apartment buildings. It's like we're trying to limit the learning curve of us getting from A to B to C.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Awesome. That's so cool. And, you know, so we're going to probably ask Peely the same question when we bring her on.
Right.
But I'm glad we can ask it separately and see what response are. So tell Peely you don't listen to this response and then
perfect.
And tell you get both recorded. So how is it working with your spouse in business? Like, I know some people will be like, I cannot work with my spouse. Yeah. I love them. But, you know, how do you and Peely work together so effectively? I really admire that. And, you know, tell us some juicy stories and how that,
sure.
You know,
well, we had the luxury of meeting while working. Right. So it wasn't the work part that was the nuance. It was being the couple. Right. And so it was the exploration of just that we always knew how to work together and then we became a couple. Right. So it's always usually been the inverse where most people become the couple and then want to work together. Right. Mm-hmm. It's just setting boundaries. Right. When you're in the entrepreneurship world, there's no shut off, right? Which is great. Like we love what we do, but that can constantly railroad the day, right? So if we're constantly working, but now we have three little kids here, there has to be a break, right? There has to be that separation of church and state where you have to have guidelines, right? You have to have a time when things start and stop so we can be committed, and you need to be committed when you're committed, right? So for instance, like if I'm at work, I need to be committed to work. If I was at work and I was thinking like, oh, I should go spend time with the kids, then I'm not getting either thing done fulfilled. And vice versa, if I'm with the kids, thinking about all this stuff for work, well, then I'm not truly devoted and committed to being with the kids, right? So you have to be able to be committed to your time that you have and then choose wisely. Now, there's going to be seasons where things like, you know, I don't know, my kid gets the flu and needs to stay home. Like there's going to be energy that needs to go there, right? Or for closing a project, right? There's going to be energy that needs to go there, right? So you have to be true to time to just be clear and communicate, right? And that's usually where the differences come with working with each other is that the communication drops off of what each is doing. And then so each thinks they're doing a great job, but they're not communicating in a way. So then some part, something gets lost in the wind.
Wow. Lots of time management too.
Yeah, time management would always fit in most things, right? And we do our best to do time management, but you really can't manage time, right? Time is just going to keep going.
I like that.
Yeah, sure enough. Jason, what's something that you would recommend somebody who's kind of like stuck, trying to get to the next level and just looking for that one thing that may just push them to the next level? Is there any advice, suggestion you can give them that may kind of push them over the edge and get them where they're trying to go?
Yeah, first thing that comes to mind, go do it. Because at least if it doesn't work, you know what not to do, right? And that's usually the part is that you think of all the, I could do 58 different things, and then you get lost in this wind of these all these things, right? And if you're like, well, I got 10 things in my mind, write down 10 things, write down the five that won't power you forward, then go try the other five. Just take action, right? Inaction definitely leads to no results. That's the one thing. Like if you do nothing, you're not going to get a result. So, okay, so we have that out of the way. So right now, if you're doing nothing, you're not going to get a result. So let's take that off the board. So let's just do something so we have a path forward to find a result.
Man, that's such good advice, because you know, part of like breaking through the next level is taking action, right? And like you said, like if you don't take action, like nothing is gonna happen. And it's okay to figure out those five things that maybe you don't want to do or that you're not good at. And so that's such some really good advice, because you know, some people it may sound simple, but it's really powerful, right? And that's kind of what you did over the years too. It seems like you took action each step of the way. You know, you might not be in the bar business anymore, but you took action and you learned so many things along the way, right? Would you say a lot of those steps that you took, even though you're not may not necessarily be working in those industries, do you think that kind of shaped your path and how you and who you are today?
Yeah, it's like, we'll say it's nonlinear, but it's all linear, right? So I can't go back and say, oh, I was going to do this again. I would just skip all that. That made me to have the experiences to be able to do what I do today, right? So it all adds value. So like where you are is your starting point, right? You can't deny that. And many times people will be like, well, if I just had that, or just, you have what you have, right? So this is your starting point. That's fantastic, right? There's a lot of things you can take into account, right? So, you know, I went from, you know, a finance degree in school into just the bar world, restaurant world, construction world, right? Into real estate world. You know, I have different companies here and there, our mastermind world, right? They all add in value to each other from the lessons learned throughout, right? And they were all needed as part of my process.
That's awesome, man. Man, it's so much stuff to cover, and you guys have so much wisdom and, you know, actionable steps that people can take, man. But you know, as we're winding now, man, like this, more than likely, maybe we missed something. Is there anything else you want to share to help, our audience become a breakthrough investor just like you?
You know, I think, there's not much that can't be done by just starting the first step. Right. And so we talked on this part, we could talk days about all the little things in that, but you need to just take the first step. Because ideally, like, it can empower two things. One, it can lead you to better questions to get better answers, right? Because most of the time, it's not that we don't have the answer, we just don't know the question to ask to get the answer. Or two, you can be like, hey, I started flipping houses and I hate it. Well, at least now you know, right? But if you don't, if you just think about it and to prepare for 4 years, like I knew someone that like waited like 3 years to get started, then all of a sudden started flipping houses and just absolutely despised it. But he waited 3 years, like reading all the books, doing all this part. And if he just got out there, got, you know, walked a job with someone, or just had, you know, jumped on in a small way in a partnership with somebody, he just did something, like that would have been 3 years that he could have acted in some other capacity. Now, at least he started, but at some part, you can shortcut yourself by taking action and eliminating what you don't want to do and empowering your empowering yourself better to better answers.
That's awesome, man. I'm gonna throw in a shameless plug. If you don't know what first step to take or the next step, just follow Jason. Follow Jason and Peely. They'll help you take which steps.
Yep.
There's so many different ways. Jason mentioned the podcast, the mastermind, the conferences, so many different things. And so this has been really fantastic, Jason. I know people are going to want to listen to you more and follow you. So how can they find you? How can they connect with you?
Yeah, so we actually have a new podcast out called Live 100. So we're really excited about that. It's been doing a lot of energy. So that's always a fantastic place. I'm Jason Yerusi across social. So you can find me there and basically find all the different links that drive you to all of our other platforms.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you so much, Jason. It's been amazing having you on the show. And we'll see you at RubeCon next year, man.
That's awesome. I can't wait. St. Louis, right?
Yeah. St. Louis, March 14th through 16th. It's going to be awesome. We'll get to hang out again. So take care, man. And I'll tell Peely we said hello.
Absolutely will.
All right. See you, buddy.
Thanks, Jason.